Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Welcome back as we discuss romances and relationships in our four nice selections this year, Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Little Women, and Dracula.
Let's talk about our main couple, Rhett and Scarlett. Rhett? What do you think?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, just to recap a little bit, before we talk about them, I feel like we should always be mentioning that Rhett is Scarlett's third husband. She was married two times before, and we have and will discuss her other two husbands a little bit more in other episodes. Not this one, but I feel like, that's important to remember that, you know, she's in her early 20s now when she and Rhett are getting married. It's basically the war is over. We're in the Reconstruction era now, and they get married after her second husband Frank Kennedy is killed. So he catches her between husbands is the famous line in the movie. I can't remember if it's actually in the book or not, but Rhett.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Rhett catches
can't
her.
Keep waiting.
Yeah. I can't keep waiting to catch you between husbands. Which, by the way, that scene in the movie. One of the scenes I love in the movie is that scene where she's drunk and he ends up proposing to her. I just think forgive me for startling you with the impetuosity of my proposal, you know. I just think that's the funniest scene ever. And she's hiccuping and burping and crying the whole time. It's just ridiculous. So I do recommend people find that clip because it's hilarious. And she decides to marry him, not out of love, but, you know, money. There's money, you know. But let's look at some basics. It's a very complex relationship that we could spend hours and hours and weeks on, but let's look at some basics. I would say from the get-go, Rhett sees Scarlett as his equal in many ways, although he clearly is aware of the fact that she is a woman and therefore, you know, not as equal, and that some of her behavior that is similar to his is going to have consequences that, as a man, he would not face. You mentioned that kind of a thing before. In regards to the unnamed lady in the buggy, you know. But he does see her as like a spirited equal, if you will, personality-wise. And from the moment he meets her, he very clearly encourages her and manipulates her to flout society's conventions regarding female behavior, even more than she naturally would, despite the fact that he knows that in this particular society of Southern, you know, culture, the reactions and consequences for women who don't follow the rules are much more negative than they are for men who don't follow the societal rules. He still encourages her, even though he knows that. So that's a kind of cruel manipulation, because it's a way of isolating her to only him. You know, if she flouts everybody else and they won't have anything to do with her, then who's the default person in her life? Rhett Butler. Woohoo! Very, very abusive, manipulative behavior. Unlike a man, Scarlett, the businesswoman, will not have the respect of her community. But he respects her. Rhett respects her. Physically, also, unlike a man, she's not safe being an independent woman. For example, riding around alone in her buggy after the war and stuff like that. But Rhett also teases her and encourages her by his teasing to behave in those kind of self-dangerous ways. You know, he's pretty manipulative that way.
Mm-hmm. You have some excellent points, and I very much agree, Alice. I find myself torn, because I love when Rhett cheers Scarlett on for doing something progressive, like, girl power!
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, Rhett, I just because I want to see it, I really am cheering Scarlett on, too, to, yes! You show them you own that business,
mm-hmm.
and now you don't have to have kids unless you want to, and I support that from a modern standpoint. even if it's not safe for her or even good for her as a character.
Right.
Oh, I didn't like Scarlett much until she started showing some strength. I loved when she went into business because I'm like, I'm going to write a book called Scarlett O'Hara, CEO, and analyze her business style. I love that part.
That would be great. You should do that. I encourage that. Yeah.
It would definitely have some minuses along with the pluses.
Of course. All CEOs do, right?
Yep, absolutely. So I got really excited when Rhett started showing respect for her strength. But, yeah, should he have been more concerned about the risks to her? Like, I'm uncomfortable even with the fact that he only gets Scarlett and Melanie partway to safety and then drives off. That makes me upset. I was really mad about he manipulated the situation behind her back. Like, it's just not healthy for you to run the mill anymore. So I'm going to go to Melanie and manipulate Melanie into having Ashley buy the mill. I mean, he knows her so well. Yeah. And he knows how to play that situation.
Yeah.
And that, I was like, but that's her pride and joy.
Well,
stop
and
it, Rhett.
Yeah, but he manipulates the situation to be the one situation she can't say no to. She can't say no to Ashley.
Right? Yeah. So it is hard for the modern feminist to me to reconcile that in this time period, he had some actual duties in protecting her when I just get so excited, you know, watching her, the hard-headed businesswoman.
Sure.
And as with Rochester and his lamb raised like a daughter line, the parts in the book that bother me in Gone with the Wind are when Rhett treats her like a child. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just see it slightly differently, and thank you for explaining how you see the angle of treating her as wanting to preserve that childlike innocence and safety.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I just saw it as him treating her as... you just don't quite have the capability of fully understanding the situation, Scarlett.
Yeah, and he does do that. But I would point to a couple things as examples of him wanting to indulge her truly, purely to try to have her be happy in a childlike way. The biggest one has to do with Tara. When they go home to Tara after the honeymoon... Well, first of all, they go on this honeymoon, this crazy honeymoon in New Orleans, and she has the nightmares and all that stuff, and he tells her flat out he wants to make her always feel safe, that she'll stop having those nightmares when she feels safe, and he wants to provide that for her. He genuinely does, you know, that's a genuine emotion on his part. Then when they do go to Tara, and it's in disrepair, and it's been, you know, decimated by the war and all that, and he says, make it what it was, take all the money you want, do whatever you have to do, you know, make it what you want it to be, restore it to its former glory. And she is like a gleeful child. That is like her dream, right? That is the only thing she truly cares about. And it's the same thing when they build that crazy mansion, and he's like, you know, she's like, well, you know, we're gonna build the biggest house in Atlanta, you know. He doesn't care. He just wants her to be happy. It's insane, it's extravagant, it's indulgent, but those are good examples of him not trying to control her, but just trying to give her the money and the tools she needs to be happy. Conversely, when he's trying to take the mill out from under her, when he's trying to control other parts of her behavior, 9 times out of 10 that comes back somehow related to her feelings for Ashley. You kind of can't blame him. I mean, he does love Scarlett. He doesn't seem to be able to, you know, be honest with her about that. And he certainly, like Rochester, wants Jane to love him on her, you know, to come to love him. He doesn't want to force it. Rhett's the same way. He wants Scarlett to mentally and emotionally give up Ashley and then love him fully. You know, he's between a rock and a hard place because Scarlett's stubborn as... bleep, you know, bleep, 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 bleep. And she's practically almost incapable of seeing Ashley, you know, in the real way rather than in this fantasy way. So I feel like there are good examples in the book where Rhett is treating her, you could say, and sometimes it's condescending or paternalistic or, you know, those kind of words, but there is a genuine desire on his part for her to be happy in a childlike way. you know, building the grand house, bringing Tara back from the brink, whatever it is, it, you know, going on a fabulous honeymoon and having all the crazy clothes she wants or whatever. You know, he wants to indulge her, and the only thing he knows how to do is to, you know, pay for stuff. That's all he's got, right? He thinks those things will make her feel safe, and that then she'll be able to let go of all her fears and her need to be a businesswoman. And, you know, some of that backfires on him. Mm-hmm. She wants to just make more and more and more and more and more money so that none of that ever goes away. So she's not dependent on Rhett's money, so she has her money to protect Tara, her money to protect what she... He never quite gets that about her, so so that's where he kind of fails to fulfill his desire to love her and take care of her. He doesn't quite see her fully as the character and personality that she is. He doesn't quite ever accept that she needs to make her own money and why. That just kind of goes right over his head somehow, which is very odd because he's a very savvy guy. You know?
Yeah. No, those are good points. And I think that if I am to judge Rhett compared to the other men of the time period, he's definitely more progressive.
Yeah.
Even in the moments where it bugs me, like, don't treat her like that.
Yeah.
Compared to the time period, mm-hmm. gotta give him some points.
Yes. Join us next time as we continue our discussion in our four nice books, Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Little Women, and Dracula. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.